This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. When a notification pops up about new email messages, does it evoke excitement or bring on stress? In this episode, we'll listen back to producer Emily Woodbury's conversation with Washington University professor Ian Bogost from earlier this year. When they spoke, Ian's essay, "It's Time to Give Up on Email," had just been published in The Atlantic. Here's Emily.
I keep my work email pretty organized, ending each day with zero unread messages. My personal email, however, is a different story. There, I have more than 43,800 unread messages. It is a total mess, and keeping up with either email account feels like a never-ending game of whack-a-mole. At least I can take solace in the fact that I'm not alone. People are sounding the alarm about email fatigue. Dolores shared with us that she has more than 118,000 unread messages spanning the past 17 years. Jen says she has three personal email addresses with a total of 35,000 unread messages. Unsubscribe doesn't work, she writes. The buildup is from probably 20 or 30 sources that email constantly. There's only so much time I want to devote to handling junk messages. On the other hand, what can replace email? Asks Carmen, a self-described adamant social media avoider. She adds, how else might I have communicated my thoughts to you for this show? Back in March, St. Louis on the Air producer Roche Hemmings visited with folks at City Foundry to better understand our evolving relationship with email.
How many emails are sitting unread in your inbox right now?
Around less than 10.
Ooh, I think I just cleaned it out this morning. I have 10.
Probably like 5,000.
Roughly, probably close to 1,000.
At least 1,000.
Let me take a look here. 84.
How many email addresses do you have?
Five.
I guess two that I actually check.
Four personal email addresses and one work email address.
What would you say that you use your personal email for the most?
Online shopping, for sure.
Like products, things like that, and then linking it to like Amazon, Netflix, things like that.
I try to use that one for like not junk mail, but like important stuff like bank statements and like society subscriptions.
Would you say that email makes your life easier or harder?
I mean, I think it makes it easier, but that's just because I keep up with it.
Easier. Because, like, if it's documents I need to sign or something, they can email it to you. You can sign it through DocuSign, and you don't even have to leave the house.
Probably easier.
Why do you say that?
Some people think that texting's too casual, so I think, like, an email is more, you know, formal.
Do you feel like email is an effective method of communication, though?
I think so, especially with just the workforce as is, because it's such a large spectrum. I think it does help in that sense, but that sense specifically.
No, especially in the workplace. I think there are easier ways. I'm definitely more of like an in-person meeting or like quick Google chat instead of like emails, because then it's just back and forth and you get really long chains. So I don't think that's the most effective way.
That was Grace and Hayden from Belleville, Elias from The Grove, Maurice from Hyde Park, Sarah from Skinker to Bolivar, and Jaden from Kansas City. Joining us to talk all things email and to share why he feels it's time to give up on it is Ian Bogost. Ian is the director of film and media studies and professor of computer science and engineering at Washington University, and he's a contributing writer at The Atlantic. So Ian, let's just set the scene. How many email addresses do you have, and just what is the state of your inboxes right now?
Five, seven, something like that. I think five to ten email addresses. I don't even know. And I have many hundreds of emails in my inbox right now.
Why do you have so many emails? Like email addresses? Yeah.
Oh yeah. No. Anytime, you know, I have a personal address, I have a work address, I have an address at The Atlantic. I have kind of every aspect of my life has an email address attached to it. I have a Gmail because you kind of have to have one of those because people assume that you're going to have a Gmail account, you know? even though I don't use it as much as my normal personal address. So I've just accrued them over decades.
What led you to decide that it's time to give up on email? You wrote about this recently for The Atlantic. Yeah. You're like, I'm done. I'm opting out.
You know, I've been thinking about this for decades, I guess, on off and on. And I've written about email a few times. And there have been a number of efforts in different eras to kind of control email. And I'm not the first one to say we should give up on it. But it did come to me as a new revelation that it is just not possible to manage. Something has to give. We get too much email from too many different sources. There's no way to keep track of all. And finally, we need a different method, different approach to managing it.
Well, you're not alone. We heard from Heather on Instagram. She says, I stopped checking my emails for the most part. I only add important and relevant people that I would be emailing regularly with to my VIP alerts. And she says, I hate checking it otherwise. People who know me know that I respond quickly to texts or Instagram and Facebook messages to let me know if I should be expecting an email from them. So Heather's like, listen, get to me on these other platforms to let me know you sent me an email.
You know, I remember many years ago seeing someone, some article, I don't remember what it was, saying, you know, I do respond to all the letters I receive. And I thought that was like a really high value principle to hold. Like if someone writes to you, you should write them back. Like that's a respectful thing to do. But imagine actually trying to do it today. At some point, it just became impossible to read and respond to all the emails. And some of them, of course, you know, like a marketing message, you're not meant to respond, but you're meant to act and process and delete and, you know, deal with it. And we've just become overwhelmed. There's no way to do it all. So like Heather, you have to make some choices, and there are tools you can use, but ultimately those tools will fail and you'll just end up letting the emails pile up. And maybe that's fine.
Yeah, and I mean, this is the science is backing up what you're saying. One study found that, you know, constant email checkers had like heart activity that suggested higher levels of cortisol,
this is terrible.
It's the hormone associated with stress. And then, you know, when they were banned from their inboxes, that went away. Higher levels of anxiety. I mean, even for me, I think of all this, you know, communication I have from all these like online sellers. You know, they send you like an email
every
day. You know,
every day.
Yeah. And I don't care about responding to them. So why am I feeling stressed when I see that number just tick higher and higher?
Well, I mean, you know, you've got a number that those numbers indicate that you have a task to do that you haven't done. And you, when you get a message from like the, you know, the company that wants to sell you a sofa or a dress or, you know, a widget, whatever it is, it takes mental cycles, even just to process whether that's relevant to you. Like they'll tell you, you signed up for this list and we're giving you relevant marketing messages, but you've got to deal with it, whereas you wouldn't if you hadn't seen it. So even just the idea of seeing an email, like that's probably contributing to that stress.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, there are so many reasons why it feels overwhelming, what we've just been talking about. I think that there's this idea that, you know, you're just always reacting to email rather than set, and this is more in a work context, I think, but you're reacting instead of setting your own priorities. Mm-hmm. You know, you're anxious when you don't have the capacity to respond to people. That happens to me all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. There have been advice for years about work email, and a lot of it comes down to don't treat your inbox as a to-do list. This is a very bad idea. But how else are you supposed to use it? I mean, that's easy to say, you know, look at your email once a day or twice a day, process the information that requires you to do something, pull it out of your email client and put it somewhere else, you know, whatever kind of way you keep track of tasks. But that's all a bunch of work for you to do. And that's not how other people treat email. They treat email as kind of the main interface for their work day, typically. So it's almost like a tragedy of the commons problem. As long as some people in your organization use email in the bad way, and how can they help themselves, then everyone is subject to that.
In preparation for this show, I was thinking back to this one day. It was several years ago, probably pre-pandemic. So, you know, St. Louis Public Radio is part of the University of Missouri, St. Louis, UMSL. And someone sent a message to literally everyone who was connected with the university.
Oh, boy.
And everyone started replying all. And it was just a never-ending stream of people being like, stop replying all. And they would reply all. And it was, I thought it was hilarious, just hundreds and hundreds of messages that day. It just, it broke productivity, but kind of in a funny way. And
you know, there's a name, there's a name for this phenomenon. It's called an email storm or a reply all storm, or some people call it an allpocalypse. So that's so common that it's gotten nicknames, that phenomenon.
Do you think we've gotten better, though? You know, there's enough awareness now, like, hey, don't do that, you know?
Yeah, that we've become better at. But when it does happen, rarely now, it's almost worse than it used to be because everyone expects you to be up on things, you know? Like, oh, I can't believe you did that.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting. In January, you wrote about a new email feature that's actually supposed to cut down on receiving the multiple, like, got it or thanks. You know, that's a common reply all is just acknowledging.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So in reaction to an email you sent about a work project, you received a note back that it contained the confetti emoji and it said the words, "Jacob reacted to your message."
Yeah. Yeah, so this was in Microsoft's email system in Office 365, and they, like, you know how you can, like, react to a text message or a social media post? They've built that into email now, and you could send back just a kind of quick emoji response, and that sounds like a good idea in principle until you realize that it's just another email, too. Like, wouldn't it be better just to get the okay? This is just another email in my inbox.
Yeah, and I mean, do you think it's going to catch on? So we have this in, you know, texting. Many of us use in texting.
Mm-hmm.
We have it in, of course, social media, even like Office software like Slack or Microsoft Teams. Do you think this is, I haven't seen one yet, an email with a reaction, but do you think reactions are
it? Yeah, it depends a little bit on the software that you use. I think in general, all of our communication technologies are tending towards social media. They're kind of all becoming social media-like. And you mentioned Slack, which is called a groupware software that some people use. And it's a little bit like IRC in the old days. Or if you're a Microsoft workplace, you might use Teams instead. But, you know, you're supposed to avoid doing email by talking in these private and public chats. And those software, those feel a lot like social media to me now. Like the activity of work isn't an email, but it is a lot like, you know, kind of having an Instagram or Twitter workplace. So that's how I would respond. I think that in general, communication technologies are turning into social. They're like mimicking social media in a lot of ways because that's what we're used to, and that's where people seek engagement and receive it.
Do you think people are hungry for that? Do we
No, we don't. No,
we don't want to be doing social media at work.
Yeah, I mean, it's become a familiar way of partaking of the world, right?
Yeah.
And you know, you do kind of like social media. You know, you like the feeling, that sort of burst of attention that you get from. There's a reason people come back to it, and the designers of these software are they're responsive to the kinds of activities that people enjoy. I mean, it makes sense on the surface. Like, if you like using Instagram, why not make work email more like Instagram? But it just turns out that there's some downsides too.
There is some things I really enjoy about the St. Louis Public Radio Slack. You know, it allows my coworkers and I to kind of vote on things, to organize stuff. Like, hey, which headline? And they can react with an emoji.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we can pile on kudos to a colleague. We have an All Dogs Considered channel, which now that's very social media.
Right, yeah.
And I do love when my dog Bear gets some love on that channel. But, you know, you wrote that these reactions, this way of making workplace... like social media, it's meant to save time, but it's also, there's like a duty to react to everything now.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, social media is an activity. You don't partake of it to get something done exactly. It's a thing. It's kind of an activity, a way of being in the world. And one of the downsides of translating that over to your workplace is you do kind of want to just get things done at work, right? In order that you can finish what you need to do and go home. And it's great to have a good rapport with one's coworkers and to feel good about the process of doing work together. That's really good. But now there is, at least I feel this way, you know, there's this sort of sense of, I have to now participate in a workplace activity at a moment to moment basis. And if I miss something, it like scrolls up the Slack window and it's gone. I need to be present constantly, all the time.
We've heard from Patricia, who emailed to us, this very old retired SLPS teacher and almost deaf person clings to email. Patricia loves her email service. We also heard from Eric, who also emailed in. While email's not perfect, I can't think of a better way to communicate with people from all walks of life, especially as someone who lives overseas. But being overwhelmed by email is a real thing, and it seems like it's nothing new. What is new is feeling like one can't get away from it. However, I feel the same way about all messaging platforms. The user has to set and keep boundaries. And we have Jerry on the line from O'Fallon. Jerry, what would you like to add to the discussion?
Well, I'm in my late 60s, so email is a relatively new thing in my life. I consider it to be, it is my favorite form of communication. First of all, I've always been a writer. I've always been a reader. I process information from the written word much more easily, and you know, I'd rather follow instructions than watch a video when it comes to doing something. But I like the fact that, unlike a phone call, or even sometimes a text, email, you know, when I get to my email, I can look through it. I can decide. I can prioritize. I can respond at my own pace. I have a record of the exchange conversation between whomever I'm, you know, communicating with. And I just think it's and again, because I think I naturally tend towards, I can get that, obviously, from this phone call. I can condense my thoughts better when I'm writing.
So, Jerry,
make it more clear.
Yeah, and I'm curious, Jerry, are you writing kind of notes to, like, folks in your life like you would, almost like a postal letter? Like, what kind of communication are you doing?
Well, I'm involved in a lot of different endeavors. I've made a deal like a documentary film years ago, and I'm always busy with something. And it's just easier for me to, again, keep track and what step are we in, much better than the old days when, I mean, I'm going back to the 80s when I, you know, worked for a major corporation here in St. Louis, and it was, you know, we didn't even have voicemail. So it was all by phone. And, you know, we had paper trails everywhere, which still seem to have not gone away. I just find it to be, and I use it personally. You know, I have friends literally all over the world, and I don't have to worry about if I text someone and it's 3 o'clock in the morning in Munich, you know, is it going to wake them up?
Yeah.
You know, they can check their email when it's convenient for them.
Well,
I mean, it's certainly not the kind of thing that if I need an immediate response, I would depend on.
Sure thing. Well, Jerry, thank you so much for that call. Some email love from Jerry. You know, he mentioned, Ian, going back to the 80s, I think, what was it, the first email ever sent was in like 1971. Yeah, and that, but it didn't get popularized until
right,
the 90s.
Yeah.
Do you remember your first email address?
We could do email like messaging on various online platforms for those of us who've been using the internet or precursors to it back in the 80s. And I, you know, maybe my first actual address was on a service like Prodigy or AOL or whatever, and then I got one. A real email address, I suppose, when I went to college in the early 90s, as many people did. And email has changed a lot over time. It used to be a very scarce thing. Getting an email was novel, like getting a letter in the mail.
Exciting.
When we talk about email, it's, you know, it's, yeah, it was exciting. It's different at different periods. But, you know, like Jerry's comments make me want to clarify for your listeners that when I say it's time to give up on email, it's not as though we can give up on email. in a literal sense, you can't. You need it to operate in the world. But it has benefits, and those benefits are going to continue to be useful. It's rather like this vibe around email as a thing you have to keep up with in your personal or professional life. That's really what has to go.
We're listening to Emily Woodbury's conversation with Washington University Professor Ian Bogost from earlier this year. We need to take a break, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. This hour, we are re-examining our relationship with email by listening to a conversation producer Emily Woodbury had earlier this year with Washington University professor and Atlantic writer Ian Bogost. At that time, Ian's essay, It's Time to Give Up on Email, had just been published in The Atlantic. Let's jump back into the conversation.
Do we know if younger generations use email? How are they feeling about using email?
Yeah, everyone has to use email to some extent. You have to have an email address to sign up for various accounts and, you know, have your banking or your Amazon or whatever it is that you do. But younger people tend to prefer other means of communicating, text or, you know, a private message on their favorite social media platform on Instagram or Snapchat or whatever it is at the moment. There was a time when it was Facebook, when people would use as an alternative to email. And in general, email just young people try not to have the relationship with email that older folks do, and that works until it doesn't, because then you get a job and you know there you are in the thick of it with email again.
Mm-hmm. Do you write letters, Ian? Like handwritten letters?
Much to my mother's chagrin, I do not. My mom writes regularly, and I just can't do it. It really is very special when you write someone a letter in a way now, because of that. And I have shifted almost all of that activity to other formats, other digital formats, whether it's email or text or something else.
I did see a couple of years ago, though, you did try a service that was probably comparable to postal mail. I think you called it Postal Service Cosplay. It's called Pony Messenger. Tell me about that. How did it work?
This was cool. I've been tracking these sort of alternatives for a while, and Pony was an app that kind of was like email if it worked like postal mail. So you send a digital message, same way you'd send an email, but it only gets picked up and delivered once a day, and that's at a specific time. So if you miss that hour, then your recipient doesn't see the message until the next day, and then they see all their messages all at once. Kind of an interesting idea, you know, like a way of managing email, but also making it feel more special. The problem, of course, is the network effect. You know, email works well because everyone has it, and unless everybody you want to communicate with is on Pony, then it's much harder to do so.
Could you take that idea, though, and apply it to, like, let's say for work, I want to get emails right away. I'm trying to book this show. I don't want to delay at all. But maybe because you wrote about how Pony Messenger, you tried it with a friend or a colleague, and it changed the way that you wrote to each other. You wrote kind of like old school letters. And I wonder, could you apply that somehow to, like, your personal email address, like only checking it so often?
The problem is that it's all up to you to do that. And you'll hear people give this advice. Only check your email once a day. Don't put it on your phone. You know, just keep it on the computer at home. And you can try to do that. But you're not being constrained by the world. You know, like your postal mail comes once a day. You know, there it is. And you can't change that relationship. And without those constraints in place, it's just really hard. It puts all the burden on you to manage email. And that's where a lot of that stress comes from.
It's really hard to have some self-restraint when it comes to digital technology. Yeah. I know that personally. We have Allie calling in from St. Louis. Allie, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Yeah, I just wanted to add my own voice as a young person who uses email a lot, both in my personal life and in my professional life. It is, I think another caller mentioned a paper trail, where text and social media is a very sort of rapid movement of information, and neither of those often have a very good search tools. Email is something where I can just sort of get all the information that I need in one place. I can always search for an email. And in work, now starting an internship, it's been very valuable just to be able to have that form of communication available to me. And I think that there's also an etiquette to email that is more conducive to conveying information than other forms of communication like texting or social media.
Yeah, the etiquette. Like, what do you mean by that? How would you describe email etiquette?
Yeah, so it's there. You open up an email the same way every time. Hi, whoever I'm emailing. And then I get straight into what I want to say. There's no kind of pleasantries very often. It's just, here is the information that I am presenting to you. It is complete. It is full. If you need clarification, email me back, and now we will have this chain of emails that you can reference whenever you need to. It's just direct.
Yeah, Allie, thank you so much for your call. And Ian, I'd love to have you speak to that. This idea
it's
of
really
like searchable, this repository for written communication.
Yeah, so we feel that way about email. And one of the sells of like Gmail and other services was that you never had to delete anything. You could just search it like you search the web. And that has changed because people started running out of space and the service providers offered less of it. But a colleague of mine at The Atlantic, Caroline Mims-Nice, did a story about this recently, that it's actually really hard to search your email. You feel like it's easy because you can search it, but it's hard to really find what you're looking for. And one of the reasons for that is that Google search, you know, kind of pulls all this stuff together all around the entire internet and uses algorithms to make sense of it. Whereas your personal email is a much harder problem to solve from a searchability perspective. So it's really interesting that we've had a couple of callers now who feel like email is giving them a record. And it kind of is in a technical sense, but I find that actually finding things in that record is a lot harder than it seems.
Candace writes on Instagram, the acronym OHIO, only handle it once. Don't need it, she asks, delete it. Respond to the rest or save them for later if required. Mm-hmm. Dan emails, I receive over 100 messages a day. My inbox currently has 11 unread. The key to cutting down email clutter is to develop a quick personal BS detector and scan the incoming mail with a finger on the delete button. And Ian, I read that, you know, one of your solutions to the never-ending email incoming is you actually have a button on your mouse dedicated to delete.
I do have a button dedicated to deleting email. And you know, but I've even given up on that since writing this piece, that it's too much even just to decide if I'm going to delete or keep the thousands of messages I receive a week. And instead, I've just started leaving them there. And I'll try to like sift through the murk and find the stuff that I really need to pay attention to and flag it or otherwise filter it. So some people have called this like the inbox infinity strategy, the opposite of inbox zero. Just leave everything piling up and hope that you extract the important stuff and don't worry about the rest. That's the attitude I've adopted.
And in practicing that over, I'm assuming, the last couple months, do you have any advice for that? Is it working?
Different people have different like tolerances. You know, there's some folks who really, like you'll see someone who has like 10,000 unread messages in their inbox. And be like, how can you possibly? And they're just not bothered by it for whatever reason. And so if you are the kind of person who's bothered by having that big number, then you need to find a way to hide it, to get over it, not to look at it. And maybe it just takes time. But I think there is still this like moral sensibility, this almost like Calvinist idea that this is work worth doing. And I think instead you have to treat email. This is one of the pieces of advice I gave in the column, like treat email like it's kind of vaguely scatological, like a little gross, you know, like wet leaves or just something like putting your hand down the garbage disposal to retrieve something you dropped. Like you just want to get it done as quick as possible, like the listener wrote in about. And so that's like an attitudinal shift, to just think of it as, now's the time when I deal with my email. I actually have found thinking about email in the same way that I think about postal mail has helped. Because now that you can get so many things paperless via email, your bills or whatever, your mail is mostly junk these days too, your postal mail.
Oh yeah.
And when I pick up the mail every day, I sort of like quickly sift through it and see if there's anything that I really need, and I just toss the rest. And so that sort of mentality, that's the one that you have to take with email now, which is too bad, but here we are.
Mm, stop giving value to it.
Yeah.
Beth writes on Instagram, unfortunately, it seems like nearly every business on earth has decided that they must email you daily or even multiple times a day, and they are the problem. And I wonder, the solution of unsubscribing. I think it's actually a law that companies have to, you know, when you say unsubscribe, they have to do it. But is there any enforcement to that? Does that actually work?
No, there really isn't. And in fact, not only that, they're supposed to only send you email if you explicitly opt in. But many of them construe opting in various ways. So some will determine that if you bought something, that counts as opting in for marketing messages, which isn't what the law was meant to facilitate. But they do this. They send you these emails because they work. And there's actually kind of a whole apparatus to corporate email, to marketing email. And there's this concept called deliverability. And so if you see an email that comes into your inbox, the best thing you can do is not interact, that you don't want. Best thing you can do is not interact with it at all. Because, you know, if you use Gmail or a service like that, by not opening it, you're helping their algorithms decide that it's less relevant, not just for you, but for everyone. Of course, you know, that really won't make a difference in the short term because you're still going to get an email every day from everyone you've ever transacted with.
Man, you really can't escape algorithms. That's just, I'm constantly thinking about what will this reaction lead to online.
There is an entire industry dedicated to getting marketing emails in front of your eyeballs, and so it's just impossible to fight it.
I found a couple solutions that have been kind of either from a country or a company that I'd love to run through with you and see what you think. I read about a 2017 French labor law that was meant to preserve the right to disconnect. Yeah. So this is with companies or 50 or more employees. These companies were required to negotiate specific policies about the use of email after work hours with the goal of reducing time that people spend in their inboxes during the evening or over the weekend. Does something like that help? Because we don't have self-control. So if it's forced on us by our company, the government.
It helps for the French. You really have to have a full-scale cultural adoption of that sort of attitude for it to work. And, you know, in a country like France, there's enough of a commitment across the whole population that, no, when I'm not working, that time is my own and you can't have it. But we don't have that at all in the United States. It's quite the opposite. We'll work ourselves, you know, tooth and nail all day long, day and night. And so it's hard to imagine. In fact, if you adopted some principle, like some legislative, you know, intervention or something, that you couldn't look at your email, people would freak out. They'd be like, oh, well, how am I going to get my work done? I count on being able to do it on my own time. So you need a kind of, cultural circumstance in which you can accept those kinds of changes.
Now, the one time it's very acceptable to not reply to emails when you're taking personal time off, you can have the auto reply away message.
Oh boy!
So this company, Thrive Global, they were exploring how to free employees from email anxiety while they were on vacation, and the solution is called Thrive Away, and that. How it works is if a Thrive employee sends an email to a colleague who is on vacation, the sender receives a note that the colleague's away and the message is automatically deleted. Yeah. The person never gets it. What do you think of that?
It's a good idea. And you can probably do that on your own email client without their service even. It's useful to tell your sender, hey, I'm not going to see your email because I'm out. And that way, when you get back to work from your vacation, you don't have all that pile up. I think that's a very fine idea indeed.
Jerry is on the line from St. Louis. Jerry, thank you for calling in. You are on St. Louis on the air.
Good afternoon. I'm retired. I'm a retired priest, and I live by myself. And 4 years ago, when COVID began, I sat there feeling sorry for myself and think I was going to be locked away here, and maybe nobody even know that I was going to die from it, which didn't happen, of course. And I sat and looked out my window and saw the garden starting to grow. And I thought, oh, don't feel sorry for yourself. You know, Anne Frank was locked away with five people in two rooms for a couple of years. And she wrote her diary, which, of course, became a world famous bestseller. So I thought I could write a one-page essay a day. And I wrote it and sent it out to about 300 friends. And I wrote over 400 of those. And when things started to loosen up more and I wasn't as constricted, people would call me or write me and say, are you all right? I missed your essays. What's going on? So now I write them, but less regularly. So that's my email story.
Oh, Jerry, thank you so much for sharing. We've also heard from, do you want to weigh in on that, Ian?
No, I was just going to pick up on the COVID idea, you know, that during the pandemic, we moved a lot of our communication to these synchronous meetings of Zoom or video conference, and we got tired of that too. And now we're just right back at it with email again.
We heard from Elizabeth, who suggests via Instagram when we're talking about just solutions to making email better for us. She says a detailed and organized filing system is helpful. That's something I found extremely helpful at work. If I don't have the capacity to read an email, but I know that I will later, I'll put it in a certain folder that I check regularly. But I know from your recent essay, you're like, no, you just have to opt out. There are no solutions. So is that true? Do you really feel there are no solutions to getting this under control?
All of these techniques, they're like you're trying to stave something off. Like they're the enemies at the gates and you can hold them back as long as you can until you can't anymore. And so, yeah, of course these techniques worked. I mean, we all use them, you know, different ways, but ultimately you will lose. And so I wonder, why not just give up all at once and, you know, let your inbox pile up? And yeah, you got to do something to figure out the messages you want, but maybe just try less hard to build those techniques and instead change your attitude about email.
In December, you wrote on X, formerly Twitter, that you're using social media less, which is sad, yeah. You said, but also good, I guess. Yeah. So you're giving up on, sort of, on email and social media? Like, yeah, what are you going to do to communicate?
What's happening to me? I'm not sure that communication is what was happening on social media or on email. And maybe that's an interesting way into the question. I was certainly posting on the internet, and I certainly send and receive emails. But is what I'm getting done interchange, you know, interactions with other people that I want to have in my life? And you only have so much time and so much attention. But I haven't felt a loss, ultimately. I felt an initial one, but it was more of a change of habit with social media. With email, you know, the question is more, how do I make sure that I'm seeing the stuff I absolutely need to, and that I haven't quite figured out. But I don't intend to give up on either. I think these like cold turkey ideas that you're really like fully going to leave email. I do have friends who don't use social media, don't have email, don't have cell phones. And they tend to have assistants, is what they have, right? They have someone working for them doing all that work on their behalf.
Yeah.
Most of us don't have that that option. So giving up is in your head, you know? And it's not important to me anymore. I've let go.
This episode was produced and edited by Emily Woodbury.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.